Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Bentman.
And I'm Ben Boland.
Ben, today's topic is one that you found, and the title alone had me just enthralled. I was excited about this one right away. I didn't know what it was initially.
Right.
But you know, once I dug into it, I'm even more excited about it.
Yeah, I was mystified myself, also drawn in by the title. Ladies and gentlemen, today we're talking about a very curious vehicle called the Puffing Devil.
Yeah. Intriguing, isn't it? I mean, just the sound of that, the Puffing Devil, you might try to think like, well, who would be so bold as to name something the Puffing Devil? What is that? It sounds like a dragster maybe or something
sure,
like that, but
yeah.
Far from it, right?
Right, far from it. This is actually the world's first, let me make sure I get this title right, Scott, the world's first steam-powered road locomotive for passengers or something like that.
Something like that. I think along in my notes here, I've got the exact description, but you're very, very close.
Mm-hmm.
A road locomotive, which is really, really interesting because we find out, you know, as we go through here that road locomotives predate, locomotives that were on rails.
Right. Yes. What we're talking about is a very curious vehicle that happened, you know, it wasn't the first steam engine by any means.
No.
We know more about the history of steam engines, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to talk about some of that, too. I mean, I've got it going all the way back to the very first steam engine. We won't dwell on that too much.
Right, yeah. But we do want to put it in context. We'll be talking more about the inventor Richard Trevithick, who was born in 1771.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the Cornwall area, and his father was a mine administrator.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wasn't the best kid in school, but he was pretty sharp when it came to math. And most of his learning was a matter of navigating the industrial areas of Cornwall. So he was always inspired by steam engines,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because the deal with Cornwall mining at the time was that the mines themselves were notoriously difficult to work with because they had to keep pumping water out of these mines. And to do this, they used steam engines. And as a result, Cornwall became home to so many steam engines, a preposterous amount for the time. And the young Richard Trevithick at this time, grew up around these machines and was fascinated by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So he's seeing these things every day, you know, kind of hanging out with his dad at work and checking out what's going on. And of course, there's maintenance that goes along with all this. And, you know, he's intrigued by the inner workings of it because most kids are. I mean, I think they see something like that and they want to tear it apart and see what makes it work. And that's exactly what he was doing, I think, is he's watching over the shoulder of people who were tearing them apart and, you know, fixing them, repairing them. Cause I think these things broke down an awful lot.
Oh, yes, sir.
And the early steam engines were used strictly as pumps. Now, when we think of steam engines now, we think of them as smaller, more mobile devices, you know, that are able to power. I mean, we don't see them much anymore,
no.
I mean, to be honest. Really,
a lot of them are novelty devices to show the proof of the concept.
Yeah, but I mean in museums and places like that when we see them, we think of them as being small, you know, more portable, I guess. And I know they're big, but portable in the fact that, you know, they're not the size of the building.
Right.
And they're not strictly for one use only, which was pumping. Because the initial steam engines, they had a singular use, and that was just pumping. That's all they did. They just pumped water out of wells, and that was it. Because they were very limited in what they could do because of the motion of the thing, the size of the thing.
Right.
You know, exactly what they did. And all of this developed relatively quickly, but I mean, when I say quickly, I mean within like 100, 150 years.
Which is still relatively quickly.
Relatively quickly. That's the key point here. And, where do you want to start with this, Ben? Because we can talk about steam. I so want to get to, Richard Trevithick and the Puffing Devil and, you know, all that surrounds that, but he kind of comes later in the story, really.
Yeah. You know what we should probably talk about first is just a brief background on steam engines in general.
Okay. Real quick. All right. The first steam engine, the steam engine inventor, his name was Thomas Newcomen, and it was around 1705, I think, and he was a blacksmith and an inventor when he developed this, this idea. And it was designed really just to improve the efficiency of water pumps in mines. So there you go. That was the initial intent of the steam engine. And, it was, you know, basically so that the galleries could be driven or dug out further underground, because the deeper you go, the more they fill up with water.
Right.
And of course that becomes a problem. You can't have people down there working when there's water continually flowing into the mine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they were doing. And, you know, the idea, you know, kind of hung around for a long, long time before anybody did anything to them, really. The guy named James Watt, who we've talked about a few times on this podcast.
Right. Yeah. Very smart. Smart guy.
Very smart guy. Yeah. He had several improvements on the steam engine, but those didn't come until about 1769. So we're talking like a good 64, 65 years of them being relatively inefficient and just, again, just for pumping water out of mines. And they remain that way for another 50 years.
Right. Yeah. The, Newcomen engine, as useful as it was, may sound pretty bad in modern day standards because it had what's called a thermal efficiency of around 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And it ate coal. It devoured coal.
Yeah.
This was a hungry machine. And, one of the problems with that, of course, is that it relies on coal, and not every place just has coal.
Mm-hmm.
James Watt, you know, when he was working at Glasgow University, he put in some changes that made this far and above a superior engine. One of the things is that its thermal efficiency increased to 2.7% as he was working up to 4.5%. And a lot of this efficiency changed the potential applications of the steam engine. But that process wasn't over yet, because now we have a new guy coming into the field.
Well,
right?
You know what? I still want, just for a second, if you don't mind, I want to talk about Watt for just one more minute here, maybe a couple minutes. But the whole way that Watt came into contact with the Newcomen design, as you mentioned, Glasgow University, right?
Yeah.
I guess he was working there. I'm not sure exactly what his role was there.
He was an instrument maker.
Okay. So he's an instrument maker. It makes sense then, because he had a workbench. And I guess, you know, some of the stuff around there that would break down, they would bring in for him to fix. You know, it was like he was kind of the handy guy there, right? So one of the things that ends up on his workbench is a small model of Newcomen's steam engine, the pump, right? A very small model that's used for teaching purposes.
Right, yeah.
And a lot of times this thing would just quit working. And which doesn't say a whole lot about it, but I mean, I guess, you know, a little model like that, there's other problems, you know, different from the full scale models and everything. But, one thing that he realized while he was looking at this thing was he realized some of these inefficiencies in this Newcomen design. And he noticed that the cylinder got really, really hot with steam, and then it had to be cooled off during this condensation phase where they would actually spray cold water into the cylinder, to bring the piston back down. And, you know, this isn't the How Steam Engines Work podcast by any means.
Right.
But, just giving you a quick thing, you know, like the steam heats it up, the piston rises up, you have to spray cold water into it to cool it down, and that allows the piston to drop back down, along with a couple of other things. There are other forces at play there, but, that's the basic idea behind the thing. And, well, he realized that, you know, if you didn't have to heat and cool this thing over and over and over again, the same cylinder, that you'd be able to get a lot more efficiency out of it. So he decided, you know, to work on a way to keep the cylinder hot at all times.
Right.
And
using a separate water-cooled condenser.
Exactly right. So two separate cylinders. And again, I've got, boy, I went off the deep end here, Ben. I've got three handwritten pages here that I'm looking at of notes about, you know, the improvements and everything. And we're not going to go into that. Let's not do it. We'll save it for another, you know, maybe a How Steam Engines Work podcast.
Oh, I'd be into that.
So I've got great notes for that.
I also have too many notes on how steam engines work.
And then here's what happened. He took the, we both do. We've got piles of notes here. So what happened was that, you know, he developed this idea and really got the ideas patented. I think I said around 1769.
Right.
So late in the game, I guess, for steam. But, Watt then had to find a way to finance his new project. So he works with this guy named John Roebuck, who's a mine owner.
Mm-hmm.
And Roebuck takes something like 2/3 of the share of the patent of the steam engine, of his, you know, redesigned steam engine.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later, I guess, this Roebuck guy goes bankrupt, you know, because of something that happened in the mines or something like that. And he sells his 2/3 share to a guy named Matthew Bolton.
Mm-hmm.
And Bolton worked with Watt, and they formed they built the world's first factory that produced steam engines. Mm-hmm. And that was in, I think it was in Birmingham, England.
Yeah.
And so the company called Bolton and Watt, and you can still go and see this factory. It's still there.
Yeah.
It, you know, obviously it's not working, but I don't know if it's a museum at this point or not. Something like that. I think you can still see it.
Little side note here. Mm-hmm. The miners were very unhappy with Bolton and Watt fairly quickly because they were still saving a little bit of money, but they began charging users of the engine something that was about one third of the amount they would have saved on the coal because the Watt engine used less coal, but you had to pay them.
Well, that's like a weird tax.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird tax.
That's really strange. Right?
That wasn't all of it because also they enforced the patent heavily, so no reverse engineering the Watt engine. So people were not super happy about it, and they kept trying to figure out how to make this just different enough to skirt around the patent.
Mm-hmm.
So people had, I guess the reason I'm saying this is that people had a present and immediate motivation to improve the steam engine quick, fast, and in a hurry.
And Trevithick was one of them.
Yeah.
And you know, along the way, of course, Watt is still working on an improved design. So he's still like doing things. And I'll tell you just a couple, I'll list the things he's doing.
Yeah.
He comes up with a double acting steam engine that now is really efficient because it's powering the piston up and powering the piston back down again. And, you know, we'll talk about that again in the steam engine podcast that we'll inevitably do at some point. But, he also found a way to convert. And this is a big one, Ben. He found a way to convert the linear motion of the piston into a rotating motion. And Watt developed the sun and planetary gear set that we see in a lot of different things now.
Right.
So, automobiles, it was huge for automobiles, huge for locomotives, of course, which is what we're getting to. And he also developed, an automatic speed control, like a centrifugal, or I think they called it, a flyball governor for the steam engine. So this all kind of evened out the power. And, all these developments are happening. Other people are saying, I still need to get around these taxes because this Watt guy is running the game. I mean, he's got the patent on everything and he's further developing. He's got the factory backing, you know, behind him. And
he's the Walter White of steam engines.
Well, and anybody that worked in the factory, because I don't think he actually developed the planetary gear set. I think it was another guy. There was a Scottish engineer that came up with it, but he was an employee of the factory, of the Bolton and Watt factory.
I see.
And therefore, his patent fell under, he wasn't really able to patent it. I think Watt was the one who patented the design.
Kind of an Edison situation.
Well, that happens in a lot of big companies.
Yeah,
and so that happened with this one. So, you know, there's this factory that's really just churning out ideas and other people are saying, how can I get around this? I've got to do something completely different. And that was where Richard Trevithick came in because he had an innovation that was going to bring it even further into the future, I guess.
Yes. And before we tell you the rest of the story, I'd like to ask you a question, Scott, or tell you a really short story.
I'd love to hear it.
Let's go back to the show before you head out Canada Way, because there's a very interesting part of this story. So we've already set the stage with Watt, who is, make no mistake, a prodigy. He's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
He is an amazing inventor, even if he isn't the most people-oriented person. You know who he hated, though?
Who's that?
Trevithick.
I bet he did, because he's got, you know, here's a guy that takes his great design and just improves on it a little bit more because, you know, patents were starting to run out around the year 1800.
Right.
And so that means that, you know, we're just now breaking into the 19th century and people are really starting to be able to improve on the Watt design even more because, you know, this Watt, I just want one more time just mention this because this is critical. You know, that rotary movement thing, you know, like I mentioned
how. The flyball governor?
Well, that and, you know, how he found a way to convert that linear motion into rotary motion.
Oh, right, yeah.
That was so huge, Ben. That was an amazing advancement because it could finally be used to drive other machines. Like,
right. It changed the application of the engine.
Yeah. You're not tied to the elements like you were before because, right. or your location, your physical location, because, you know, these mining pumps were strictly for mines and they were placed there and that was where they ran. Mm-hmm. Well, now you could have a device that would have a rotary motion that you would need for grinding, but you didn't have to be near a river that ran a grist mill.
Right.
You know, you didn't have to have, you know, wind and water wheels to do things. You know, before you did have to have that, and now you didn't. Because these pumps or these steam engines were strictly for pumps prior to that. Now they could be used to drive wheels, and wheels were huge. And then people, that got, I guess, people's mental wheels spinning and decided that, you know, maybe there's a way I could use this for transportation.
Let me dovetail into that here. So one of Trevithick's big claims, things that he's known for, right, his big improvements, is that he believed there should be high-pressure steam involved, right?
Yeah, that was where we left off at, I guess, before
right.
the ad, right?
And he wanted a boiler that made this pressure possible.
Yeah.
But Watt was against this. I just want to read this.
Yeah.
This is a quotation. Watt was implacably opposed to this development, which he considered foolhardy and dangerous, famously declaring that Trevithick should be hanged for his efforts. So.
Nice work.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, I was there. I am pretty old.
You took us there.
Thanks. But, point being, Watt was incensed. Can you imagine saying this guy should be hanged?
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, because he improved on your design. That's why. It's a little bit of sour grapes there, I think.
Little bit. So this thing that he is working on, that Trevithick is working on, ultimately does become a game changer, because this thing that Trevithick designs ultimately does become it's like a paradigm shift, mm-hmm. you know? It's so much bigger than maybe even what the most optimistic people of the time thought could be.
Well, I mean, I can't stress this enough, Ben. This is before the steam locomotive. People just didn't have any other way to get around other than, you know, walking or horse transportation or gravity. You know, if you're at the top of the hill, you could roll down the hill. That's fine. But now here's a way that you can power yourself up and over the hill. And that's brand new to everybody. And to put yourself in that mindset, like, this has got to be incredible, amazing to see something powering itself forward. It's moving on rails or, you know, as in Trevithick's early design, not even on rails. It was moving down the road, you know, the road that was intended for horses to walk on.
Right. Just cast yourself back there if you can and imagine seeing a horseless carriage for the first time. Your first question is, where the hell is the horse? And then how did they fit it in there?
Yeah.
Are they burning that horse for energy? This boiler, this is really what it all comes back to, that this boiler is able to withstand the pressure of all this steam. So Trevithick designs this boiler for its strength, and because he doesn't have a flat base, he puts the fire and the flue inside of the boiler using a U-shaped fire tube. So this maximizes surface area and...
Well, you know what? I got a little something to add to that if you got 1 second.
Yeah.
Let me just break out here for just for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I found a BBC little short on high pressure steam innovation and Trevithick's designs here. And you just talked about both of them right in one sentence. And that's why I figured I'd just stop right here.
Oh, yeah.
Because, the two things. Now you can look this up. It's BBC, the genius of invention, you know, Trevithick's innovation, something like that. The two big things that really led to his success were the fire tube that you mentioned. It was U-shape. Now in the demonstration that I saw, the guy had a tea kettle.
Yeah.
And had one regular tea kettle and one that had this, had a fire tube through it. It was just a metal tube, goes right through the middle of it, all the way down to the fire. You could look right through it. The idea is that there's more surface area that's being heated and it has greater contact with the water surrounding it and therefore it boils faster. So he had a very efficient boiler system in that way. And the other thing is the, cylindrical boiler design.
Yep.
Now, you know, in a train, we see the boiler on the top of the train. I guess it's laying horizontally,
right?
And
yeah.
that giant tube-like thing on a steam locomotive is the boiler, and the piston is way down by the wheels. It's a small little thing down at the very front of the train that you wouldn't even expect. I mean, you kind of think of the cylinder now when we think of engines. That's where the piston is, right?
Right.
You think there's a giant piston in there that's driving the wheels, but that's not the case. That's all water and fire. And it's loaded with tubes. These tubes that carry, carry heat, and they also carry the boiled water. I mean, the steam. You know what? We won't get into exactly what they do, but it's loaded with tubes. And the cylindrical boiler design was big because the Watt design boiler was square.
Mm-hmm.
And the square design, if you put a lot of pressure into a square, welded together, box, I guess, the sides are going to bulge.
Right.
The seams are all going to pop open. But in a cylinder, you can put an immense amount of pressure inside there and it will hold. And that's exactly what, Trevithick was playing on this idea that he could go with the high pressure steam. Watt's design couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, the invention of this boiler did more than just eclipse Watt's square design. It even did away with the condenser.
Mm-hmm.
So without this condenser, right? The stuff from Trevithick's engine, the stuff they're expelling is puffing out directly into the atmosphere,
sure.
Which gives it this name, the puffing devil.
Yeah, it was either coal, which was burning, or wood.
Right.
I'm not sure which it was. It was mm-hmm. likely coal, if I had to guess. And also some steam. There's a little bit of steam that's let off there as well. So yeah, it gives it this appearance, but people, when they see something like this coming, they must have thought the world was ending, Ben. I mean, when they
right.
see something like that, it's like this, I don't know. It's almost like a monster
yeah,
that's coming down the road.
Oh, well, one thing, let's be clear. When he first built his Trevithick engines, he was putting them still in mining operations, right?
Sure, yeah.
And they had fantastic pound per square inch. We're talking on the order of 25, which sounds so unimpressive today. But let us consider, the other things were around like 7 or 14,
Yeah. Well, these are pieces of metal that are hammered out by hand by a blacksmith on an anvil, and
right.
they're bolted together, and they're not sealed up the way that we see them now and, from modern factories.
Right. Yeah. And, so his first one was installed at a place called Cook's Kitchen Mine in 1800, and in 1870, it was still running. Scott, this engine was so powerful that Trevithick is looking at it one day and just, watching this monster, puff smoke and pour steam and eat through the ground in a mine. And he says, man, that thing is strong. That thing is probably powerful enough to, and then it hits him. Maybe it can propel itself.
Well, he probably saw the rotary motion of a drive wheel or something like that.
Right.
And realized like, okay, well, I'm looking at this horse wagon going by and here's the drive wheel. Wait a second. I'm putting these two and two together. Why do we even need that horse out front? Right. So I'm sure that that's kind of the way it probably went. It's just, who knows? Maybe he got into the ale one evening and he's laying around, kind of dreaming, daydreaming, thinking
right,
about what
yeah.
would be really cool. And, I don't know. This is all, we're just guessing, right?
We've but been there.
It's like, that's right. In a moment like that this weekend. So anyway, so he's probably thinking like, how can I make this work? And he just kind of, cobbled together something really. I mean, more than that. I mean, but it's a big, impressive machine, obviously. But,
right.
To be able to think like that, I'm going to put one of these steam engines on top of a wagon, really, at that point, but with steel wheels. And we're going to try to make this thing drive, and we're going to drive it through the town.
Right.
It's going to require several operators, because someone's got to steer, someone's got to stoke the flames,
yeah.
someone's got to be in charge of the bypass valve just in case too much pressure builds
uh-huh.
up. And
gotta
there's got to be
at the switch.
A few different people. So, he finally gets all this together, and it's somewhere around December of 1801.
Yeah, I've seen it described as by Christmas Eve. So
Christmas
in time leading up to Christmas. Yeah. And they had been working on it since November of 1800. So on Christmas Eve, they start running the puffing devil. But here's the thing. He improves it the entire year he's working on it. The boiler by this time, by the first run, is doing 47 pounds per square inch.
Not bad. Not bad. So he's got a lot of pressure going in this thing. And, the first drive, I guess, or the first demonstration was December 24th, so Christmas Eve in 1801, as we mentioned. It's the first demonstration of transportation powered by steam. That's super impressive.
Ben. As a practical method of transportation.
Yeah, I guess.
There were failed experiments before.
Yeah, and we've talked about one of these guys,
yeah.
right? The Nicholas Joseph, Cugnot, is that how
yeah,
you say
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah,
Cugnot, maybe?
Cugnot.
And, I think that around 1770, there was a steam-powered wagon. Now, I don't know if it was really the same type of thing because this one that we're talking about, Trevithick's design was steerable. And I don't think the other one was steerable.
No,
I think
it
that
just
it was,
went.
It
right?
just went, and it, in fact, it went through a wall, I believe, right,
right? Yeah.
So that was no good. And I think it destroyed itself on his first outing. But this one, I believe I don't think he made it up to the top of the hill. He's trying to go up a hill called Camborne Hill, I believe.
Yeah.
And Camborne Hill, which is, by the way, a folk song now, you know, based on this initial trip. I don't think he made it up the hill on the first attempt. I think that's what happened, right? So he didn't make it up, but he and the guys that he was with, I think there were like 7 or 8 guys on this thing.
Yeah, you know, as many as 8.
Yeah, probably having a big Christmas Eve party.
They could have got up the hill.
Yeah, probably could have, yeah. Maybe if they had lost a few passengers
right,
along the way, right?
Right?
But had to turn around and come back home. And then I think it only lasted, this original Puffing Devil only lasted a few days, right? Because there was an incident. They had pulled into, I think it was, I want to say it's an inn. I don't have the details right in front of me, Ben, but
right.
I remember the story that they pulled into an inn, I think, and they were going to have, you know, have a couple drinks, I think. And they left it out in a barn. Is that right?
Yeah. So they had some disasters. It didn't last too much past, December. I had heard that one of their, they had 3 journeys, I think, on it.
3, that's it.
I think it's just
maybe
3.
That was what I was thinking of, the 3. I don't know if it lasted 3 days. Maybe it was a little longer than that, but 3 journeys.
So they, one day, Trevithick and one of his buddies go out and they're trying to visit a place called Tehidy House, T-E-H-I-D-Y. It's about 4 kilometers away.
Mm-hmm.
Trevithick's tending the engine. Vivian is steering. They hit a gully in the road. Steering handle wrenches from Vivian's hands, and the devil overturns.
Mm-hmm.
So passerbys and other people helped push this back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Push
sure.
this back to its right way.
Yeah, because he's in a gully, right?
Right. Okay. And so they say, okay, this thing is messed up. You know, let's just declare victory for the day because the engine broke down. So they go to the hotel and they have a couple beers.
Yeah, public house, I think is what they call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, public house, you know, drown your anger in some pints of ale. And, it turns out that either a fire was still burning in the Puffing Devil's furnace or the water evaporated, but the metal parts became red hot. And then
that combined with a wooden wagon.
Right.
And a barn that it was probably parked in.
Right. Made everything burn.
Yeah, yeah. So the whole thing burned to the ground. Of course, there's nothing left. You can't really salvage something like that. I mean, I don't know if he ever even really attempted to rebuild the Puffing Devil himself, because he was really working on the idea behind steam locomotives, and he wanted to get this thing on rails because
right.
for, I believe, Ben, I think it was something like, I want to say like 200 years prior to this, horses had been pulling wagons on wheels, on rails.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's this like real primitive railway system, but it wasn't steam powered. And I mean, really for a long, long time, they were pulling things on rails because they knew it was an efficient way to do it.
Yeah.
It's just they didn't have the mobile power to be able to handle something like that or to do it. And that's exactly why Trevithick's design, you know, this high pressure, you know, relatively small design, steam engine was able to be used for this application, and it fit perfectly. And that's exactly what he did, because he designed, now Trevithick is credited with building the first full-scale working railway system locomotive ever. And it was in the UK. It was demonstrated in Wales, I believe, the first time, right? And, the first journey ever was something in, I think it was in February of 1804, in
right.
late February of 1804. So that's 3 years after, 2.5 years after the Puffing Devil debuted.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is a huge advancement.
Yeah, he's a mover and a shaker. I do also want to point out that the finished engine for the Puffing Devil weighed about 1.5 tons.
Whoa.
Because, you know, think of the kind of materials they were working with. They weren't working with aluminum
no.
or something.
There's
know.
No carbon fiber?
There's no carbon fiber.
No, not at
absolutely.
That point. It was another 5 or 6 years before carbon fiber was developed.
So we've got a little bit of a downturn in the episode, though, because...
You're going to let that go, the 5 or 6 years comment?
I'm going to let it go.
Okay. Well, what about, like, aircraft aluminum, something like that?
You know what?
1801, Ben. There had to have been aircraft aluminum somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Not being an aircraft historian, I might have to defer to your wild guess.
Nanotechnology, things like that.
Nanotech, clearly.
It was all big in 1801, I'm sure.
Yeah, nanotechnology actually is closely related to steam engines.
Yeah, I mean, we're just now hearing about it, but it's been around for a good 250 years.
Yep, Ford just didn't want you to know. We are totally kidding, by the way, before anybody finishes writing that email. So, unfortunately, yeah, it is true that although Trevithick was an astonishing inventor and an innovator, he did not fully reap the success or the rewards of his success, right?
Yeah, because he met an early end, I guess. Not real early, I guess, for the time. He was about 62 years old when he passed away.
Right. He was 29 when he built the Puffing Devil, just for...
Okay, 29. That's not
comparison.
Yeah, sure. So he was relatively young when he built this thing. But he only lived until 1833. Now that's age 62, which is, it's a relatively decent life at that time in our history. But yeah, I mean, to not be able to see this thing all the way to the end, you know, some of these innovations, like I think that there was another, groundbreaking locomotive that was put on display in something like 1826 or something
right.
like that. It was called the Rocket.
Yeah.
And that's the one that most people think of as being like the most, because I think it won some kind of speed and endurance test at the time.
Right, by Robert Stephenson.
Yeah, that's the one, Ben. And, you know, prior to that with Trevithick's design, I think it was, you know, more of a simple thing. It was
right.
pulling smaller loads, and it was, you know, just maybe making routes to and from the mine, you know, back and forth, just carrying coal and, you know, whatever the supplies were necessary. It wasn't so much that, you know, this is a viable transportation for humans, really, you know, to carry right. them across continents or anything until after the rocket design.
Now,
maybe.
Trevithick did continue working on boiler designs mm-hmm. up to his very last days. He was at the J&E Hall Limited Company. And designing, I think he got up to a 150-pound per square inch boiler. When he passed away in 1833, he left a legacy that some people would be tempted to dismiss or say it was forgotten. But you guys know car stuff. We do not end on a down note because we have some good news for anyone who's interested in seeing the Puffing Devil live and in action,
yes.
which sounds crazy, right? No cameras around back then.
It was burned down, right? I mean,
yeah, it was
the
gone.
The thing burned to the ground. So how could they possibly have a working Puffing Devil? Well, somebody has gone to the effort of building a replica of the Puffing Devil. And this thing actually operates on the city streets of Camborne, at least once a year, as we'll talk about in a second. But,
right.
this replica project, I think it took about 2 or 3 years to build, right? Or no, one and a half years to build total. So it took just about as long as it did to build the original. because, you know, there were no working, drawings of this thing. You know, there's no, engineering graphs to follow or anything like that. I mean, the guy probably just, you know, as I said, he just cobbled together in a shed somewhere.
Right.
So the people that built it, you know, they were basing it on, drawings, you know, not engineering drawings, but just drawings that people have done of the event or
like
of the
eyewitness accounts.
Exactly. That's right. And descriptions of what happened. And they knew what, you know, Trevithick's steam engine designs looked like because they still had those.
Right.
But the difficult matter was just putting it onto a wagon and making it work and making
yeah.
it look like the original. And they did this for the bicentennial, the 200th anniversary of the initial running of the Puffing Devil. So in 2001, they ran this because of, you know, the 1801 initial journey.
Right. Yeah. And, here's the cool thing. To me, it's one of the coolest things about the Puffing Devil. You can go on YouTube right now and watch people take this thing out and ride it. And I'm going to go ahead and let you know, guys, it looks very strange.
Yeah, it does. And
there aren't really seats.
And you'll see it on in something called the Camborne Trevithick Day Parade. And Trevithick, just in case you're wondering, it's Trevithick. So do a keyword search for that and you'll likely find it. But there's a a site called trevithickday.org.uk, which you can go to, which talks all about this annual Trevithick Day that they hold, I say held because this year's event or celebration has already happened. It happened in late April of 2014.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically, it's an annual celebration of the heritage and mining heritage of the area with a focus on Richard Trevithick. And, because he's the, you know, I guess the pioneer really of high pressure steam power. And this is huge. I mean, it was such a turning point and such a great development and such an advancement. That, you know, I mean, I think that this guy definitely deserves a parade, definitely deserves a day named after him. And of course, they're very proud of him.
Would you call the Puffing Devil a car, though?
Ooh, no, I would not.
Well, no, it's you call it a road locomotive.
It's I call it a road locomotive only because that's a new term to me, and I've heard it. I think it's cool, but to me, it's a steam powered wagon, I guess. Almost like, Kugno's, the steam powered
wagon.
With the difference that this one is, controllable. You know, that this is nice. I like it.
Steerable wagon.
Yeah. Something that, you know, you can take out and with reasonable amount of certainty that you're going to be able to bring it back home as well.
Reasonable. Don't stop to drink.
Well, yeah, that's right. Don't, leave the fire going.
Yeah. Oh, for Pete's sake. So this, I think, is the end of our story about the man known as the Cornish Giant.
Yeah, and there's so much more.
There's so much more, and it's a fascinating journey, I think, because you and I, and a lot of you guys listening out there too, are always interested in the history of the automobile. You know, what's this amazing thing that is across the world, for something as well known as automotive technology, it's surprising how many unknown and obscure stories there are about it.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do that steam engine episode.
And there's no doubt in my mind that this is just like maybe I don't even want to say the first step, but this is just another step in the progress towards or the progression towards the automobile that we think about. You know, when we think about the automobiles starting in 1890s or whatever, but this goes back to the late 1700s, early 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, there's information about stuff that leads up to this prior to that, you know, another 100 years prior to that. So it goes way, way, way back, a lot farther than you might think.
That is an excellent point. And Scott, I hope people enjoyed this episode. You have to go to YouTube and check it out.
This is one of those, Ben, and you're right. You're exactly right. You have to see the Puffing Devil in action to understand why it's called the Puffing Devil. And it's just an amazing piece of machinery to begin with. But this is one of those episodes where, and we've talked for about 45 minutes now or something close to that. There is so much more to the story, and just the steam story alone is huge. I mean, I wish we could go into details. I got so many notes, and you do too.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have to do it sometime in the near future.
I think we have to do a steam episode, buddy.
Probably do.
But before we do that, there's one last thing for today's episode, and that is listener mail.
Let's hear it.
Okay, Scott, this comes to us via Facebook from our listener, Lindsay G. Lindsay says, "Hi, guys. I just finished listening to your podcast about carbs versus fuel injection, and I loved it." Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
You guys also talked about car pranks for listener mail. Well, a couple of summers ago, I worked part-time for my school district and worked mostly with the maintenance and ground staff. We had a couple work trucks that we would use, and if I didn't keep an eye on my truck, occasionally the guys would go into my truck, turn the radio all the way up, wipers full speed, vents on full heat blast, harmless stuff like that. We also found a Fred Jones from Scooby-Doo figurine that we would try to place in weird places, such as buckling him into a truck seat, sitting him on a tailgate, etc. Basically, it was a summer spent pranking the guys back and forth. Oh, and the last part, I gotta say, Lindsay points out that made me laugh. Somebody was in the porta potty at their job site, and someone else took the work truck and parked it just right up next to the door, so you were trapped in a porta potty.
That's bad news. Any kind of porta potty prank is bad news.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I really try to avoid even going into a porta potty.
Yeah.
Just the cost benefit there, the risk, man.
Just for fear of what may happen.
Who knows?
Yeah, among other things. Right. Now, the thing is that email though, that's funny because I mean that sounds like a great summer, like just a summer spent, you know, with work trucks and, you know, working on the grounds, the groundskeeper stuff, and all the harmless pranks and all that. That's just sounds like a good, memorable summer. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I always want to hear about people's prank stories.
Harmless pranks. We have to do more harmless pranks around the office here. Don't you think?
Did you see somebody took that out of order sign off the microwave and replaced it with reserved for private event?
I did not see that, but you know what? That would be maybe a step up in size from our current conference room.
Hey, you know what? You might not be wrong.
It gets a little crowded in there, doesn't it?
It gets a little crowded.
Yeah.
I think it would be easier if we're all standing.
Maybe. Well, thank you, Lindsay, for the email. We appreciate it. And again, that's funny. I always love to hear about listeners with these harmless pranks. Anything that harmed anybody?
Yeah.
Send that in too. We just may not read it on the air.
Right. You can find us at Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can listen to every single podcast we have ever made on our fantastic website, carstuffshow.com. And you can send us an email directly. We are
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.